Today is Sunday, December 20th, 2020, and I want to say Shavuot Tov u'Mevorach to all the wonderful students who are looking at me across the world at this moment. I want to go back to a number. I received a tremendous amount of comments on recent Shiurim, and I just want to comment further, and there's a lot of research that you can continue to do. Rabbi Grinstein Yehoshua writes to me again about the problem of serving non-Jews on Yontif. So he gave me sources that Rabbi Yashiv, others came up with the idea of being makne, all the food that they're going to eat, to be makne to them before Yontif, and that way you're not cooking food for yourself and being mabe b'shorim, your mamish cooking, it's their food. Or heating it up. You know, the Eitz HaTir, I'll just say as follows. How do we run a hospital on Yontif? I don't believe there's one hospital in Israel that only has Jews. When they cook on Yontif, prepare food, they're preparing for the non-Jewish staff, they're preparing for the non-Jewish patients. I don't care if you tell me it's Laniado or Manei HaYeshua. I don't have to go into great details. You all know the Chatam Sofer. Today we treat Jews and non-Jews when it comes to medical problems. We treat them absolutely equal. So you have the problem there. What do you do about hotels? Here you have in Israel, one of our biggest industries in normal times is the hotel industry. All right, go down to Eilat. I believe every big hotel in Eilat is under proper hashgacha. On the other hand, what percentage Jews, what percentage Europeans, non-Jews, coming for the hot weather here? Go to Yam HaMelech, go to the King David Hotel, entertaining the President of the United States and 300 people with him, and they're there for Shavuot, let's say. Now go to the Israeli army. Not everyone in the army is Jewish. Don't you have endless Druze in the army? I know that many of my grandchildren, when they served in the army and they were on duty on Shabbat and Yontif and involved in wars up north, Lebanon, their Druze officers would take names, will call we're going to be home for Shabbat, right after Shabbat we'll call your parents, and they have to eat too on Yontif. So this problem is a much more major problem than we ever imagined. And I'm sure a lot has been written, tshuvat lahalacha lemaisa, how to handle it. It could be if the food is all prepared and it's just a question of warming up, it could be that that itself opens a petach lahetar. But all right, I'm sure that Gedolei Yisrael have dealt with it, but it's more than the problem of one individual Jew. Regarding eating, or one individual Gentile, I should say, regarding eating in a... this is the issue we raised. Learning Torah in the Sukkah, Hasidic thought, why it's so important. So a Talmud, Ilan Risa, if I'm pronouncing it right, or Risa perhaps is the proper pronunciation, sent me from the Kloisenberger Rebbe. And he told me he's half Yeki and half Litvak, and yet he knows the Kloisenberger Rebbe has published the Vrei Torah, and I don't want to go into it in detail, but essentially what the Kloisenberger Rebbe is saying, if I understand it correctly, that when you learn Torah in a sukkah, you have the mitzvah, it's sitting in a sukkah, nani hakavad. Sukkah represents Eretz Yisrael, you're learning Torah, you walk out of the Sukkah, and you continue learning Torah, it's like you're taking with you the Dalet Amot of Eretz Yisrael. So it becomes very important to start learning in the Sukkah, take in the Anei HaKavod, elevate your learning Torah, and take it further. All right, there's no question, learning Torah in the Sukkah is crucially important. But that was the Shiloh we dealt with. When the lights go out, what do? Regarding Yom Kippur and intravenous IV, I have to say Baruch Shekivanti LeGedolei Yisrael. My student, he was a student here in the early years of the Kollel, Rabbi Moshe Rosenblatt of Kew Gardens Hills, sent me a link to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Chelek Gimel, Tshuvat Chelik Gimel in Or HaChaim. The third time he deals with Or HaChaim. Simin Sadi and Reb Moshe Paskin's apps. You'll see the different Torah. I don't want to go into it. It'll take too long. He goes already with a totally different approach. Rapeh Yerapeh, that a doctor can only do his magic and harm a person and puncture you and use needles when he's healing you. But there's no such concept that you puncture your skin to intravenously be fed just for the purpose of not eating on Yom Kippur. And Rav Moshe absolutely holds that you should eat when you have to eat on Yom Kippur and not get involved with extraterritorial concepts. And Rabbi Rosenblatt wrote to me, also worthy of note, Rav David Feinstein's son said at Rav David's recent Levaya that when the doctors told Rav David that he shouldn't fast on Yom Kippur, Rav David accepted this without any doubt or quivering. So, all right, we have a tremendous Achi Samach, and Baruch Shekivanti Ledat Gedolim. Okay. A Shaila came up, and Rabbi Grinstein once again sent me material, but this is a question I already saw, and it brought back a lot of memories. And the question is very simple. Last Friday, there was a terrible, terrible tragedy Kvish Mispaf 443, if I'm saying it, I believe it's 444, 443. You know, it's the other road that we use when the waves takes you not to use one, use 443. If you're going to Modi'in, Hashmonaim, you're going to use 443. So a family coming in, I believe it was from Bethel, the car crashed into a parked truck, and many were injured, and two young children, Jungreis, from the Jungreis family, were killed, lo aleinu. Now, this tragedy caused a tremendous backup. Nothing moved, evidently, for hours. And people saw they're not going to reach Yerushalayim before Shabbos. And people went to the gas station. There's a famous gas station on 443 that's been subject, lo aleinu, to terror attacks. And they spent Shabbos there. And that was the whole question, an Arab, and again, I go back to what I've said so many times, we can't teach hatred. Arabs are our cousins, human beings, we have to treat them with tremendous respect. When an Arab picks up a stone to throw at you, and that's in the news right now, if you know what's going on in Israel, it happened to Shomron on Shabbat, then he's your enemy, and then I hold absolutely permitted al pidin to shoot. 100% permitted. I have a student who was killed by stones thrown at him in Hebron in the late 70s, Lo aleinu, in Kiryat Arba in Hebron, I believe it was Hebron. And stones just killed that soldier and that the Supreme Court, they wouldn't let the house. God have mercy, who this mazuz was, Ashreinu, that the guy disappeared from the Supreme Court, and no one knows why, but Zodiat Hashem. So this Arab from came and heard that they're stuck there, and he brought food, he brought rolls, and he offered to drive them home on Shabbos. And some of these people were stuck with little children. All right, this is a fascinating question. I can only tell you, when I was growing up, so in Bnei Kiva, the Bronx, we had a family, the Abramson family. That family, the father was a shochet, if my memory is correct. And it was mamish, a frum family. There were four girls in the family, and all of these four girls were raised frum and were frum. And they were going up, I don't know if it was two or three of the girls, were going up to the mountains during the summer. And there was an accident, and lo and behold, Shabbos is coming, the sun is setting. And they got out of the bus or wherever, whichever way they were traveling. It was not by car. We know who had cars then. Teenagers didn't have cars. Young people didn't have cars. But they got out of the bus, and there was a gas station, non-Jews, and they left all their items there in the gas station. They explained that we're Jewish, we're sure. We observe the Sabbath, we can't carry. I'm sure the gas station looked at them and thought they were out of their mind. But a Gentile has respect, and they walk to the next community, then found a Jewish home and a place to sleep, to stay, whatever, they worked it out. And after Shabbos, they went back, and everything was waiting for them, but Kavod Gadol. I remember this made such an impact on everyone. The story circulated in the Bronx, Mot Mesirat Nefesh, at a time where everyone is assimilating, and here these young ladies gave us a tremendous message. As some of you may know, one of the ladies involved later marries Professor Petrov, Yaakov Petrov, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, one of the top YU graduates, a little bit older than I am, and he became professor at Bar Ilan at Greek and Latin, and they lived in Har Nof. He is Lo Aleinu Be'olam HaEmet, but she should be alive and well, Devorah Abramson Petrov. So you see here, you have that story which never left my mind. A number of years ago, again, time flies, it may be 10 years ago, 15 years ago, so this Shaila came up again. If you recall, it was an Erev Shabbos, and people were going up to Lakewood for Shabbos. Now, I saw this in Borough Park, where they bring, I remember a whole group from Mexico. They brought them to Borough Park to see Jews observing Shabbos. All right, I can understand it. And these were kids. There were a number of buses going to Lakewood for Shabbos. One had a whole group of girls. I don't know if it was Shulamit or Prospect Park or Beis Yaakov. And one bus was yeshiva boys. And an organized group, evidently from a high school. And it was a tremendous snowstorm, and it became obvious that they're not going to get anywhere near Lakewood before Shabbat. And what happened was, again, all the details I don't want to say sign on it. It's not something I would write in scholarship. I'd have to research it. But as I recall, the girls, the bus pulled over, and they told the driver this community, let's check where there's a shul, and lo and behold, there was a Chabad shul, and they put them up for Shabbos and took care of them kedat v'kedin. The other bus called Lakewood, and a Rosh Yeshiva, who remains nameless, as far as I recall, his name is never revealed, and he said to them, is the bus driver Jewish or not? And they said, no, the bus driver's not Jewish, he's Russian. And he said, let him drive to Lakewood, it's sakana to be stuck in the snow out on the highway. And he told them to come into Lakewood on Shabbos, which they arrived about 3 hours after candlelighting, 4 hours after candlelighting. And it turned out the bus driver was Jewish, of course. It's the old story with the Russians. When you get to talk to them, just in Siberia, there was a big incident that made headline news that Chabad already has a number of outposts in Siberia. And in Siberia, you build the menorah, you have experts, they build it out of ice. They build the menorah out of ice. So this particular one guy built a 10-foot menorah, and this guy built a 13-foot menorah. And they dedicated it on Hanukkah, they lit candles. I don't understand exactly how you can light the candles. It's freezing, 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 but all right, they know what they're doing. And suddenly, the top Protestant clergyman in the entire area shows up for candle lighting. A Russian, a clergyman, a guy, a guy, and the guy says to the rabbi, Rabbi, you're lighting for me as well. My mother's mother was Jewish. And he was a bit of a Talmud Chacham ready. He knew that if his mother's mother is Jewish, he is Jewish. So this is an interesting story. At the time, I criticized those who went on to Lakewood, and already it was during the era where my Shurma being recorded and YU Torah, and I got response from Lakewood that I didn't appreciate the Sakonet Nefashot. And some reliable people, students of mine, told me, Rebbe, it really was Sakonet Nefashot. You can't leave a bus in the middle of a highway, freezing weather. They thought the driver was non-Jewish. I had the feeling they would have even been matir if the driver was a Mechalel Shabbos and didn't know any better, Tinek Shenishba. So this is an open question. What happened on this, the Shabbat before this, you had children there. It could very well be that al pi halacha we could have been matir if the Arab Abu Ghosh, and it shows you what a fine individual, was willing to drive them, to drive their car and take them, and he would get them home. Could be. On the other hand, I have to say it's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. In other words, these children will remember all their life that their parents slept in a garage. An Arab helped them get comfortable, not to be Mechalel Shabbos in the slightest way. To me, it's an open question, but I think I would go with the latter. What a Kiddush Hashem. Halachically, Rabbi Grunstein already wrote out the sources, and he's right in this respect, and some of you have heard me say it a million times. The Gemara in Pesachim, the whole Shaila, if you're allowed to travel from Psua to Tzidon and Erev Shabbos, I think has a basic message for us. We should never travel alone this on Friday. We never know what's going to happen on the road. But sometimes you can't help it. I can understand. People are coming to Yerushalayim. They left at 12 noon, let's say. They never expected this tragedy, which obviously, too, they cleared up the Lo Aleinu, the injured, the dead, the cars, took measurements, tried to understand what happened. No one in a million years would dream that would happen. But B'mokum Hasatna Mekatreig Erev Shabbos B'mokum Sakhani, you all know the Gemara, you all know with Yosef HaTzadik, all that we read in the Pasha this week and last week, and Rashi quoting the Midrashim, B'mokum Sakhani Hasatna Mekatreig. We never know what's going to happen. The earlier we can leave, the better off we are. Okay. Finally, I want to say that let me just see if I have everything. Yeah. I want to say that Nachum Lem told me about the Chabad coming to light, Chanukiah in public, giving out Sufganiyot, and it was all goes back to the question of lighting at these minyanim, lighting at a wedding, lighting at a public conference. And I have to tell you, halachically, it's a very big problem. What do I mean? Of course you can light from the day to tomorrow. Lighting, you can light 100 menorot. But can you make a bracha? See, it's different than a sukkah. A sukkah, if you go into one sukkah, and an hour later you go into another sukkah, and 3 hours later into another sukkah, and there was a hefsek, there you can make a bracha, because each time there's a kiyum of sukkah. Same thing with tefillin. For the sake of argument, on fast days, when I came on Aliyah, you don't see it that much today, but 52 years ago, on fast days, endless Jews in Yerushalayim put on tefillin at Mincha. Now, I'm not talking Tisha B'Av, I'm talking what they put on in the morning and put on again at Mincha. I don't have to tell you, if you put on again at Mincha, you have to make a bracha. Of course, there's a kiyum. You have the kiyum of tefillin. When the tefillin not on you, there's no kiyum. With a Hanukkah menorah, the chiyuv is to light and make a bracha. Once you made the bracha, ladlik ner shel Hanukkah, lahadlik ner Hanukkah. And Rabbi Rubin, I'm looking for you, but I hope you got my email with an interesting source, the difference between the nusach, lahadlik ner shel or lahadlik ner Hanukkah. But once you light, you fulfill the mitzvah. It's like Kiddush. You can't make Kiddush 10 different times. You make it once. That's it. You're Yotzei. All right. Kol Yisrael Arevim. I understand this halacha that if another Jew needs to hear Kiddush and doesn't know how to make it and ask you to make Kiddush for them so you can make the Kiddush for them, that's Arevut. Okay. I'm Yisrael. Im. From a Monday class. But once you're Yotzei, you're Yotzei. And you see with Reb Chaim, again, this too is a fascinating question. Reb Chaim Brisker walks out of Shul and Brisk. He has to walk 2 blocks to his home. Along these 2 blocks, there are 30 menorot that are burning in the street. No, the minute of Reb Chaim Held, the minute you see a menorah, you have an obligation. Shasa nisim lavoteinu. No, he was worried if he makes the bracha. No, once you've made the bracha, you fulfilled the chiyuv, you fulfilled the mitzvah. From that point on, you can't make that bracha again. How can he go home and light candles and make the bracha for his wife again? Shasa nisim lavoteinu. All right, it's an interesting question. The whole question of how we lighten shul, it's zeya shvach lahatstik, it's difficult, but that's Mini Yisrael. And Mini Yisrael, as you know, hearing my shirm over the decades, I don't go against Mini Yisrael. All right? Then it expands. I've seen already at weddings where there's a big crowd, Vic Snow is playing the drums, right, or Ron Vic, and they're at the wedding. Yeah, right, Baruch Hashem, they're at the wedding, they're lighting candles again, and they're making brachot, I've seen that, and then you have a YU dinner, I don't know what they do, the Reitz dinner, I think, is always on Hanukkah, am I right or wrong? And you have a Reitz dinner on Hanukkah, and you're lighting candles, do they make a bracha? I was once at one of these Reitz dinners, I don't remember. But the question goes on and on. So you have to come up with a chiddush that there's a special key in Barovam Hadrat Melech and Asanisim Lafasim et Hanes. All right, it's halachically you're on very thin ice, but for shuls I can't argue because this is Minig Yisrael. And this is why it became such a question, because when you have a shul, you have a base, you have a raison d'etre, this is the shul, this is what we've done. Now you have street minyanim. No, it's not a shul, it's not a makom kavua, and you light. And then there are other problems. If you light, it should burn a half hour. On a street minyan, I'm not certain you can leave it burn, the full half hour. You finish mincha, you light, you chopped up mariv, and people are going home. Where do you leave the candles? It's all right, open to interesting discussion, and I guarantee you when this nightmare is over, and if you heard the news this morning, the news is not so good, because what's happening in England is frightening. If it's a new type of virus, will the vaccine cover it? In other words, we have a vaccine against what we knew to be COVID-19. But if there's a COVID-20, will the vaccine cover it? Yomo, what do you have to say?
COVID-19 has so many thousands of different...
Yomo is giving me an encouraging answer, and Yomo...
The vaccine was specifically made to cover many, many different possibilities.
He holds that the vaccine will cover many, many variations. Halavai. But once this is over, I guarantee you, Sfarim will appear. Sheila to Tshuvit be Eit HaNegev, HaNegev, Eit HaMaka, HaMagefa, call it what you wish. The response to literature from the plague. And I'm sure this question will come up and be discussed. And all right, smolcha b'nei Yisrael lo neviyimhem, b'nei neviyimhem. Okay, with that I've caught up, and now I want to roll with a very, very fascinating tshuva. My wife asked me last night, what are you teaching today? I said what I should have taught last week, but I told her again, and she said, boy, this is a fascinating question. All right, it's Mishnah Halacha Chelik Vav Siman Kuf Tet Vav. And the person asking it is the son of the Sasava Rebbe. Maybe he became the Sasava Rebbe subsequently, 1972. And what happened was an old man had difficulty getting to Sukkah. He's afraid to walk in the streets at night. And he asked the Shaila, and his rabbi told him, you are Pata from the Sukkah Mitztayah. And Rabbi Reuben heard about it, and the young Rabbi Reuben, heard about it, and he wrote a tshuva that you're absolutely not putter, and the rabbi didn't know what he's talking about. And he gave four major reasons why you're not putter, and he sent his tshuva on to Rabbi Menashe Klein. Reb Menashe Klein at what time had been his Rebbe. He studied in Reb Menashe Klein's yeshiva. And Reb Menashe Klein tells him that generally I like your Divrei Torah, but this time I absolutely disagree with you. And he says, you gave Arba Avot Mazikin, you called what this person was Matin on the basis of four different concepts, mainly Mitzta'er, you called it Arba Avot Mazikin, and I have to tell you that rabbi is correct, and I can't be prejudiced. As much as I like your father, as much as I appreciate you as a student, as much as I love your Divrei Torah generally, but here I have to take issue with you. Now, it all goes back, it's one Daf Gemara, very fascinating, and this gets us involved, I have to say, it's very hard to comprehend all this if you haven't studied psychology. You need a good college education to appreciate the nuances. It's Masechet Sukkah, Daf Chaf Hei, Amid Bet, 25b. Let me check that I'm reading it right. Okay, because with the hey, you can always think it's a chet. 25b. Avel chayiv besukkah. An avel chayiv in a sukkah. Lo aleinu, my father died. Tonight's my mother's yard site. My father died. Yudchet Tishrei. It's the breslin of a rebbe died and. Reb Nachman and Reb Aaron Soloveitchik died that day, and my father died that day, and that was Chol HaMoed. So the Avelut, the Niyog Avelut, doesn't begin, but after the burial, and Avel I am, and Avel Chayev Besukkah. So the Gemara says Pshita. Well, what's the Shaila? He's not a no-name. A no-name is Patam Mikola Mitzvah, all right? That's a different story. Only Mitzvah. Lotas say, you all know, Lo Aleinu, those of you that have been through Avelet know the difference, O-name to Avel. But here, what's the, what? The Gemara has to say it? An Avel is Chayiv, but what is he? He's not a Jew anymore because he's an Avelet. So the Gemara answers, Mahu the Taiman, it quotes already the opinion of Rav, Mitztaya Patam min HaSukkah, that a Mitztaya is Patam min HaSukkah, Hai Nami Mitztahahu. He is Mitztaya. Lose your parent, lose, God have mercy, I don't want to say anything else. I mean, to lose a parent is normal, that's the derech of life. But God have mercy when you lose a close relative of the Mitztaya. I mean, it's even an understatement. It's a lot more than Mitztaya to the double power. Okay? So, Hishipata, Kamash Malan, Hani Mitztaya, the Memela, Avalhachi, Ihu de kol mitztavei nafshei, iba'i leili yutuvei daitei. Well, on these words, you can say sheyurim for another 7 years. And what the Gemara is saying is, yes, mitztah is pata from a sukkah, but that is something that's beyond this control. Look into Rashi. Shahasukkah mitzarato kagon chama otsina osircha b'devarim shesikach b'chem. That yes, mitzvah is potter, it's cold. Alright? It's too warm in the sukkah. There's a bad smell in the sukkah. You put up trees that the chvei still had some type of bush, fruit on them, and it now has a very bad smell, it's sour, that's mitztah. You don't want to sit where you're freezing, you don't want to sit where it's very warm, the Sahara Desert, you don't want to sit where there's a bad smell. So what the Gemara is saying, that mitztah has to be classified in two different concepts. One mitztah is because of who you are, what's going on in your mind. That type of mitzvah, the Gemara says, you have to boile liyatuve daito. You have to get your mind set. You are obligated. That type of mitzvah does not patter you from the mitzvah. You have to overcome it psychologically, emotionally. I have to tell you in parentheses, this is a very interesting halacha, because when you're all fatumut, you know the halacha is, if you can't concentrate, you can't daven. Here, you can't get away with it. You can say, well, why is it different than davening? I can't concentrate, I can't think. Remember I told you the story of my friend, it's a real true story. So he went on to become a very big Talmud Chacham. He learned for many years in Mir in Brooklyn, when Mir there was on the map. Today it's a different world, because everyone comes to Mir here and to Brisk here, and when they go back to Lakewood essentially. But he was in Mir when Mir still was in its golden era in the United States. And he was so fatumbled when he got that refusal, and he read about the girl was engaged, she was in her mother's womb, and it was true. She married that person that was Hasidic world, Yichus, all that counts, all that interacts there. It's a different world than our world. Am I right today, Rabbi David Twesky? Absolutely. Tona Einikel. But he said, I'm pata from mincha, I'm so fatumult, I'm so upset, I'm in such distress. And here we tell the person, we smack his face and say, look, we appreciate the fact you're an avelet. We appreciate the fact you got a letter telling you bad news. I don't know, you submitted your book for publication and it was rejected. The Jerusalem Post had some article this Friday about a lady who submitted her book and it was totally rejected. She finally published it on her own and it became a bestseller. So you got bad news. Bad news does not potter you from the sukkah. Pull yourself together. Smack your face. Smile. Make a lechayim, whatever will make you happy, you're chayv in sukkah. But if it's something extraneous to you, it's not in your mind, not in your psyche, not in your psychology, not in your emotion. It's simply a fact. It's freezing out, the sukkah is cold. It's so warm, you build the sukkah for the sake of argument in Petach Tikva, in Beit Shemesh, the middle of the day. Even Yerushalayim, I'm up high, so I never have the problem. But in my daughter's sukkah, which is on Rechov Lamed Hei, and it's down low, I know that we don't dilly-dally when we eat lunch in the sukkah. It's so warm at times. All right, you're not chayev to remain. That's mitztaya externally. There's very little you can do, perhaps, I'm trying to set the ground for what he'll talk about later, very little you could do to do away with that type of tsar. So there you are pata from sukkah. Go one step further. The Gemara says, Chatan v'hashush benim v'kol b'nei achupa p'torim min ha-sukkah kol shiva. But wait a minute. The halacha is that the chatan and all that are coming to rejoice with him, the sheva brachas, all that goes on around the chatan, put them in a sukkah. What's going on here? My dear students, I have to tell you, I've said this 1,000 times over. People get married during normal times. Now, by the way, a lot of research already has been done. They're coming up with psychological research that many kalat, many brides, 3, 4, 5 months later, are very upset that they never had a proper wedding. You got to remember, a boy has a bar mitzvah. Oh, you're a king. I always tell people when the chatan, you know, I'm quoting the Gemara in Ketuvot, late ktuvah b'li tigre, you never have a wedding without a fight. So the girl wants this, the boy wants this, the parents of the boyfriend. I always say, psak halacha, follow the girl. You had your bar mitzvah, you were king. The wedding is her night. She gets her way. And I don't quibble with me. I hold this to be black and white. So the caller already, they got married in the backyard. There was seven, eight people present. I know my own relatives got married this way, my brother's family. I know Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik's daughter just got married this way. He sent me video clips. I don't even know if there were eight people at the wedding. So wait a minute. People say, I've gotten this comment so many times, Rebbe was so exhausted from the wedding, so much went into it. A Sheva Brachas now, every night, Sheva Brachas. And I tell them, thank God you're young. Kalavai, you should never have to sit Shiva. The Sheva Brachas is against the Shiva. It's the same concept. Shiva, you mourn 7 days. A wedding, you rejoice 7 days. Make the most of it, because there's enough tsar in life that we all experience. All right. So the Gemara here is asking a fabulous question. 1 minute ago, we paskin the novel has to eat in the sukkah. And 1 minute later, we're paskining that a chatan v'kala and the sheva bracha are potter from the sukkah. Wow. It's a fabulous question. Give you an answer in a minute. Look up the Rambam, Hilchat Sukkah, Perek Vav, Halacha Gimel. And you'll see the Rambam, bright, clear, ha'avel chayev besukkah, chatan v'chol hashush benim v'chol b'nei chupa p'turim min chasukkah kol shiva yemei hamishteh. Wow. Salach alamaisa. Black and white. Anavel chayev, a chatan, and everyone coming to make him and Aryan rejoice, patur min hasukkah. So look into the Maggid Mishnah, and he quotes the Gemara, he quotes Rashi, he elaborates, and he explains the difference. And I'm not going to go through the whole Rashi. You'll see there are other viewpoints in Rashi, but this is the heart of it. Why is a chatan pata from a sukkah? Because what is a sheva brachat about? Sheva brachat, everyone rejoicing with the chatan and the kala. That's the concept of the sheva brachat. There is never enough room in the sukkah. Yomo, do me a favor. Sit close, so when I look up, I see you and Ellie, okay? Don't sit over there. I don't want to strain my neck. Sit over here. Stay 2 meters away from Ellie, whatever the halacha is. Okay, beautiful. And Shehu Mitztayer, he's quoting Rashi here. The chatan is upset. The lomotsu ayil kol b'nei chupa b'sukkah. All his friends can't get into the sukkah. No sukkah is big enough to hold the proper sheva brachas. That's why the chatan, they got married erev yontif. Ellie, you got married erev sukkahs. Don't correct me with the facts. If I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. You got married erev sukkahs. He had sheva brachas on sukkahs. He has a big sukkah. But when 50 friends come to rejoice with him, they cannot get into the sukkah, and that's why a chatan is patur. Well, very fascinating. I have to tell you that this is the exact basic reason why Hasidim don't eat in a sukkah. on Shmini Atzeres. All the Pilpulim I quoted, very nice. This is the basic reason. In the Hasidic world, it's a different concept. It is a Rebbe, the Rebbe, the Suda, the Shulchan, the Hitva Hadut, the Divrei Torah, the friendship between Hasid. This became focal, this became central. It's not a Litvisha world. I come from a Litvisha world, opening a Gemara, a Rambam, getting involved with a Reb Chaim. Oh, that's our joy. But that's our connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's our Gilui Shechina. It's not the Hasidic world. And that became so important that Mela, during the 7 days of Sukkot, when sitting in the Sukkot, said, all right, we have to yield. But on Shmini Atzeret, where you can never have a Sukkot big enough to take in all the Hasidim said, being with the Rebbe is more important than being Mekayim, the words of the Gemara, Mem Zayin in Sukkah, Yatev Yatvinin, Barech Loma Barchinan. And that's exactly Rashi here, exactly what Rashi is saying about the Chatan. So, you see, and I have to tell you, it's not, from a psychological point of view, why don't we tell the Chatan, look, make your peace with it. It's Sukkot. We have to be in a Sukkah. We can't fit in 50 people. So, make a Sheva Brachas with 10 people. It's not the end of the world. No, why don't we say it's no different than an Avil where we slap the Avil's face and tell him stop crying and stop being sad and stop being upset and stop being angry and stop being frustrated and stop trying to question, did you do enough for your father? Did you do enough for your mother? There we tell the Avel, constrain yourself. Why not say the same thing to the Chatan? So you see, it's not so simple here to draw the distinction. But obviously, with the Avel, the sadness will be there no matter what. At least be Mekayim the Sukkah. You don't need a crowd with you. With the Chatan, we don't want to interfere with his happiness, with his rejoicing. I don't have to tell you what the simcha means. Look at Lecha Dodi, Chatan al Kala. It's a moment in time. We don't want to take it away from him. But you see that even this purely objective concept, that here we say an Avil this, a Chatan this way to go, it's open to a lot of question and a lot of hard thinking. What is Mitztaya? When do you tell the person, forget about your personal feelings? And when do we tell the person, we join with you in your personal feelings? Ad kedei kach, that we are mevatel the din of Sukkah, a din d'oraita, for your sake, your happiness, the kala, the sheva brachas, go out of the Sukkah. And this is halacha lemaisa, the Rambam, crystal, crystal clear. Now, so what do we see from here? We see that there's a din, black and white, of mitzta'er, and that you can have situations where a person is patur from sukkah even when it's a d'oraita, when it's sukkah, when it's a chiyuv d'oraita, he is patur from sukkah. Let me go a step further, and let me show you a halacha that we referred to in a different context, but here it's the whole halacha. It's in Shulchan Aruch HaRechayim, Tuf Reish Mem, Sif Katan Dalit. And he takes it further, and again, everything the Shulchan Aruch says has sources going back to Gemara, going back to Rishonim. Mitztayer patam in asuka hu from misham shuvav. Someone who's very wealthy and he has servants who help him. I know wealthy people like this, or people that are ill, lo aleinu, and the person who helps you is Jewish. You're patam from asuka. Avo belayla rishona afila mitztayer chayav leochol sham kezayit. The first night is different than any other time in Sukkot. Why is it different? Because the first night we learn out, the Torah tells us that Sukkot falls the 15th of Tishrei, Pesach falls the 15th of Nisan, and the first night, just like there's a chiyuv to eat a kezayit matzah, there's a chiyuv to eat a kezayit bread in the sukkah. And this is very important halachically, meaning first of all, if you come into a sukkah the first night, be sure to eat a shir kedei achilat pras. It's just like Leila Seder, you don't have to eat three kezaitim. It's not the kezayit and the kezayit and the korach. No, and a kezayit afterwards in the afikomen. Here you have to eat one kezayit, but you have to be careful to eat a slice of bread within 6-7 minutes. Okay, I'm being machmir. Actually, the concept of kedei achilat prat runs from 4 minutes, they sheet that all the way to 9 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. But the first night, because it's a chiyuv d'oraita, and it's on the level of what you would have to do on Pesach, you have to be makpid even if there's rain, right? You know the halacha, you have to check and check and check. Finally, if it's midnight and the rain doesn't stop, so you eat already in the sukkah, to at least a kezayit, and then you go into the house. But we try our best the first night. So the first night, he says, we have to try our best, even if we're mitztayer, we have to at least eat a kezayit in the sukkah. Now, what is mitztayer? And the Shulchan Aruch explains, ze shen yochol lishan besukkah b'fnei charuach o b'fnei chazvuvim ukiyotze behem o b'fnei chareach. Wow! That he's mitztayer. It's cold, it's hot. There are too many flies in the sukkah. Too many bees. How many times have you been stung by a bee sitting in the sukkah? And all this is mitztayer. But look what the Shulchan Aruch says. This is only if you built the sukkah originally in a place that generally is safe, generally is nice, generally does not have flies, generally is not that cold, generally is not that hot. B'mikreh, by chance, it happened that suddenly 100 bees raided this neighborhood. By chance it happened that it got very cold and the sukkah can't handle this cold, or it got very hot and the sukkah can't handle this heat. But if you build it originally in a place where you know there are going to be flies and there's going to be a bad smell and you're open to the heat and open to the cold, this is not a sukkah. You cannot be yotzei anything in this type of sukkah. It was built lachatchila, where you can later say, mitztayer, mitztayer, it's too hot, it's too cold, there are too many flies, too many bees, etc. You have to build a sukkah in a place where, under normal circumstances, you can eat, sleep, drink, study, answer the telephone, watch television. Today, who watches television, go watch what you want on your computer. This tool, do you understand the implications here? Imagine you're building a sukkah in New York City and people are throwing bricks from the surrounding buildings into the sukkah. Imagine you're building a sukkah in New York City and you have to walk a few blocks to get to your sukkah. Holdups, highwaymen, riots, Black Lives Matter. Can you imagine? Do you see what's happening here? Lachatrila, your sukkah is not a sukkah. And more than that, even if you'll say you built it and never dreamt all this would happen, you're mitzta'er and you're pater from the sukkah. And this is the Shulchan Aruch halacha l'maseh. And here you look into the Ramah, don't ask any questions, we'll analyze it thoroughly, then you'll ask. V'yim asam mitchila b'mokam shemitztam mitchila oshti obishena. Oh, i'efshar la'asot lo echad mechem b'sukkah. Machmat shemityarei milistim oganavim tshahu b'sukkah. Eino yotze ba'oto sukkah. Could you imagine if you build a sukkah in Brooklyn and thieves, and the only time I ever was robbed in my life was in Borough Park, and I can tell you the police, I had a miracle that when I walked into the police station to report it, out walks an officer who happens to be my student. And you should have seen him in his resplendent uniform with his bars, and he took me to the mafakade of the police station. This is my rabbi from Jerusalem. It was an Italian. Oh, the Derech Eretz. He wrote out the report, and then I found out later that my student explained to me that they don't even do anything because it's thievery. It's drug addicts that see an open window in a house without bars. They jump in, rob what they can, it was the middle of the night, and they run away on deserted railroad tracks, if you know Borough Park, and the chances of catching them are 1 in a trillion, not even 1 in a billion. So imagine you build a sukkah, ganavim, listim, it's, you can't even be yotze, even if you sit in the sukkah, this is not a sukkah, because l'chatchila was built and you knew it was sakana, and you knew it's b'mitztaya, and this is the Ramah, black and white. But watch, it doesn't end here. And what about if you're in a sukkah and the winds get so strong, it blows out the candles? What about if the sukkah, suddenly the smell is so bad, you can't sit there, you can't eat, you can't drink? What about if you have to go to another sukkah? You know that there's a sukkah, you know that there's a place to go. It's a number of blocks away. And the Ramah says that if it's Toreach Gadol, if it's a hard walk, I'm older, harder for me to walk, 4 blocks, too far, I'm not chayiv to go to the other sukkah, mitzta'er. And here it has nothing to do with the sukkah. It's not like you say it's too hot, it's too cold, there are bees in the sukkah. Here it's simply my feet would struggle to walk 4 or 5 blocks. All right, Baruch Hashem, I'm not that bad off. Don't take me literally. But believe me, between my wife and myself, we're not walking the way we used to walk. And not only that, what about if you can handle the walk to the other sukkah? But let me quote, that your friend will not receive you b'seiva panim yafot. That your friend is not going to receive you with happiness, with joy. Whatever the reasons are, he's busy, he's crowded, he has his own family, he doesn't want any guests, it's sukkahs, he wants to be with his wife and children. You can have feelings like this. You're an unwanted guest. Oreach shenatan lelun, to quote Agnon, but nevertheless, you're not welcome. All right, he'll say, sit down, make a bracha, he'll be decent, but you can see really you're intruding upon him. If that's the case, you will also be putter. And this question, how do you draw the lines? How do you have a boundary? What do you call mitztayer? The human being, the sukkah, the psychic of the human being. And you look in, the Taz, you know, elaborates, ke'en taduru. It has to be like a house. When you buy an apartment, when you move into a house, you want to be protected against the rain. You want to be protected against the heat. You want to be protected against the smell. My daughter once looked at an apartment. It was beautiful, but not far away was a tremendous garbage dump. That itself ends any chance of your wanting to live there. The smell, this is ge'en taduru. You want to be safe in your house. You want to be able to lock the door. You don't want listim, robbers, thieves, ganavim, gazlanim, all that can take place. And take a look. It's in the halacha. This is nothing that de Blasio invented or that it's contemporary. It's not Chicago. All right, the shootouts, Baltimore today, the crime rate. Wow, New York. It's right there in the Ramah. And in all these cases, you are putter from the sukkah, ad kedei kach, that even if you feel awkward, I'm going to go to my friend 4 or 5 blocks away, and he's going to, you know, you've had this experience, you popped in on someone, you dropped in on someone, and they weren't that happy, you're right, you could see they're doing, going out of the way, they don't want to smack your face. But it's not save upon him your fault. This is, I have to tell you, this is a modern part of modern life. Let's talk about it a little. Part of modern life, do you go to visit anyone without making an appointment? Do you knock on someone's door? Someone is coming today to give me a volume that I gave Haskama to. It was just published. I'll talk about it tomorrow when I can show you the volume. They called, they made an appointment, they have to find out. My wife said, call again to be sure my husband is awake. No one pops in on you, and who knows what you're doing. This is part of modern life. When I came in Aliyah to Israel 52 years ago, people used to say, Tavo, Tavo. There were no phones, it was a different world. There were always, Saturday night, I knew people who would be sitting, waiting for guests to come. And I remember there was a singer, Amar, forget his first name, I taught his, a Moroccan singer, very popular in Israel in the 60s. And I taught his daughter, his granddaughter, and children at Tzaddikim, that much I can tell you. And after the Six-Day War, he went to America, he gave concerts, and suddenly he was making a flood of money here. He had a struggle and a break-in and Moroccan and all that went with it. And due to what was his first name? Anyway, if anyone knows the first name, you'll tell me later. Amar was the last name. And in America was he popular. And then about 30 years later, I remember big headlines in the Israeli press, Amar, the singer, Hazameh, HaChazan, is coming back to Israel. And they interviewed him. He was so happy in America and doing so well. Why are you coming back? He said, let me tell you, where I grew up in Morocco, I grew up in Israel, you never, ever made an appointment to see your own children. In America, I can't visit my children unless I work it out with them in advance that I'm coming at a time that is comfortable for them. That's what we've reached in America. I have to come back to Israel. I have to tell you, his son is a medical doctor, class act, Davinson, the young Israel Hillcrest. Wonderful, wonderful grandchildren. That branch of the family I know. So something good happened in America. Halavai, more good should happen. Return home. We need you here, as I will talk about tomorrow. But you see, this Joama, that's the first name. Joama, he's not alive. When he died, there were big headlines here. But that was quite an answer. And that's what it means, b'seva panim yafat. And I have to admit, I am guilty. I never visit anyone without letting them know in advance. I'm coming. Is it convenient for them? You call, you invite. You never barge in on someone. That is a new concept, the result of the telephone, modern life. Today with the computer, it's way beyond me. Today you can't use a telephone anymore. Anything you have to do, email, this, that, families, the websites. I don't even know what they're called. My wife is all day. She calls me over, shows me pictures of great-grandchildren and movies of great-grandchildren, what's going on. And it's all on a family website. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, what a world. We're going to reach a point where we won't even know how to talk to each other. Today it's the emails. You don't even say, how are you? Happy to correspond with you. All you do is what your business is, and you get a one-line answer, v'gamanu. Okay. But this mitztahir, these sources, where do you draw the line? And not only where do you draw the line, but you're not chayev to push yourself. Ad kedei kach, could you imagine, all right, it's a little far to walk, he lives 4 blocks away, 5 blocks away, mitztayer, patur min ha-sukkah, not obligated to push yourself. Wow. And now he elaborates, and he says, you see, that before Sukkot, we should try our best, quoting Reb Menashe Klein LaHalacha, before Sukkot, you have to try your best to figure out where you can build a sukkah that will be safe, a sukkah where you can eat, where you can drink, where you can sleep, where you can have ke'en taduru. It should be like your apartment. Before Sukkot, you're obligated to think. During Sukkot, mitzta'er, patur min ha-sukkah, except for the first night where you have to really make a heroic effort to get to a sukkah and eat a kezayit, to be mekayim, the mitzvah of eating on a sukkah, tetvav, may tetvav of Pesach. Ah. And then he goes further. What does this mean, mitztayer? How do you define it? And he says, the truth of the matter is that if you start talking with people, they'll tell you the whole essence of sukkah is a certain amount of tzar, because you're leaving your house, you're leaving your comfort, you're leaving your beautiful mattress, your beautiful bed. No one sleeps in a sukkah on the level they sleep in the house. No one eats in the sukkah with the same breadth of space that you have in the house. And he says, yes, mitzvot require sacrifice. Mitzvot require some tzar. But when it comes to sukkah, you measure it by the way you would work out your house. If it's ke'en taduru, make the sacrifice. If it's more than you would tolerate in your house, you're not required to make the sacrifice. Walking too far, no seva panim yafat, too hot, too cold, could very well be Hata min hasukkah. Then he raises the question. What did we say? That before Sukkot, don't make these cheshbonot. Before Sukkot, you're absolutely obligated to find a place where you can build the sukkah, where you will be comfortable, where it will be ke'en tanduru, to be makayim, the beautiful mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, of sitting in the anane kavod. Tell me, how much do you have to spend to be makayim this concept? What do we say? What's the halacha? Someone who wants to be generous towards the mitzvah, hamavazbeis al yevazbeis yoter mechomesh. Not to give away more than a fifth of your possessions to be mekayem a mitzvah asay d'oraita. If this is correct, anyone who owns a home in Jerusalem, you are a millionaire. If you have three bedrooms, we're talking $1 million or more. I can't believe what the prices are. I can't believe what my apartment is worth. How did I become a millionaire? Either millions are worth nothing, could be that you're a millionaire, but it's worth nothing. I don't know. Everyone says, sell and go live in the desert. Baruch Hashem, I have to live near Gris. It takes me 4 minutes to get here at 6:15 in the morning, and it can take 8 minutes to get home. Baruch Hashem. When I was younger, I could walk it. Today would be a little hard to walk, but it's Kadesha Yaseh. Well, you're a millionaire, Vic. You're living on Prima Levi. You gotta be able to spend the $200,000 on building a sukkah. Hamavazbeis dol valyavazbeis yoter mechomesh. If that's true, we have a tremendous problem. Someone lives in Borough Park. You ever see the shacks in Borough Park? What they go for? What Jews are willing to pay? It's beyond words. Reb Menashe Klein comes up with a whole different theory here. And you'll see it in great elaboration. Very fascinating. When you talk about Sukkot, you're obligated to do what you would do in normal circumstances. You have to go to a place for 7 days. In America, 8 days. What would you pay to hire an apartment for 8 days? More than that, someone who goes away for 8 days, they generally live in one room. Tell me, Elliot, you've gone to a hotel? Here you live in a beautiful apartment, Yerushalayim. What do you have? 4 rooms, 5 rooms. You go to a hotel, you're paying a fortune. You're living in one room. A human being, ke'en taduru, when he's only going away for 1 week, Rabbi Reuben, you go away for Pesach, you go to the Yam HaMelech, you're living in one room. If that's the case for Sukkot, Rav Menashe Klein Paskins, you have to figure out what it would cost you to get a one-room apartment to stay in temporarily in your neighborhood. It's not here, Hamavazbeis al yevazbeis yoter mechomesh. This is a question of Sukkot. And the whole concept of a sukkah is ke'en taduru. And if the concept is ke'en taduru, what would you pay for 1 week in one room in your neighborhood? That's what you would be obligated. And that's what he paskins l'halacha. But wait a minute. There's another problem. And here this is the New York problem. And a new Hebrew transliterated word enters the Bar Ilan computer. Hold up. Translated. Spelt. Hey, Aleph, Lamed, Dalet, Aleph, Pei. Hold up. And he says, but there's another factor here. This man is afraid to walk in the streets. He's worried that it's dangerous. He can be held up. And here he goes into the whole question, is a hold up sakanat nefashat? And he says, I'm quoting Reb Menashe Klein, that generally speaking, there are holdups every day in New York, on every street, on every corner. But they only kill you pam or pamayim b'shana. They only kill you once or twice a year, despite how many holdups there are. But he says, a holdup, it scares the heck out of you. That too has to be considered. Even if they don't kill you, but someone puts a gun to you. There was a pharmacist in the Newark area, Moshe Billick, Moshe and Esther Billick. Esther just died, Moshe died a few years ago. He was a survivor, saved by a non-Jewish family that later became Hasidei Umat Olam. And he went to pharmaceutical school. I'm sure Herbie Maltz, Chaim Maltz knew him. And he came in Aliyah right afterwards. We were very close, because how many Shomer Shabbos Jews were there in the greater Newark area? I was in Maplewood, a suburb of Newark. And the very nice people, Moshe and Esther Billick, they have two wonderful sons living here. Wonderful people. And he opened a pharmaceutical place here in Katamon. And believe it or not, he was held up at gunpoint. And he told me, I'll never forget, he never dreamt that, he says he was held up once in Newark by gunpoint, and held up once in Yerushalayim at gunpoint. And it scares you. I mean, all right, he had lived through the Holocaust. He didn't get scared easily. But to have someone point a gun at you is not a pleasant experience. And here he continues, yes, it's true, they only kill once in a while. Today I think it's a lot more than one or two a year in New York City. But all right, it's a small percentage of all the holdups, but nevertheless, it scares you, it frightens you. And he talks here about Chas v'Shalom, Shnei, two or many non-Jews come in to hold you up. He never dreamt that they would hold you up in Jerusalem. You can imagine how stupid Bialik was when the first time they caught a thief in Tel Aviv. Remember this? Who was Jewish. And Bialik said, Baruch Hashem, they're not mad at all the Jewish people just because one Jew was a thief. And I would have said, what a tragedy that Jews have become robbers, thieves. You remember Rav Avadya Yosef when shooting in Katamon? One Sfadi Jew killed another Misha Madaval Kazeh. And Rakefet said, but what's the implication that Ashkenazim can kill each other? They're Taka murderers from the old country. But Sephardic Jews, one should shoot each other. Mishamadava Kazer. And he says, and then he uses a very non-political word. He says in the tshuva, and maybe they have to censor this out, V'kol shekein b'shchorim halalo b'New York. And he says, certainly in New York where you have so many shchorim, I don't want to translate. One Rosh Yeshiva used this word like in the 60s and the 50s. Everyone used it. Everyone heard the word. Right or wrong, one Rosh Yeshiva used the word, and boy, did it cause problems for Yeshiva University. And here he says, where they're blacks, I don't want to use the slang, he says, it is sakonet nefashat 100%. And this man is right. He is putter from walking the streets to another sukkah. It's mitzta'er in the full sense of the word. And he says, and even if it's true that you'll say, Well, there are holdups in your own house. You can hear a knock on the door. People jump in. We've had in our building, I cannot count how many holdups we've had. One, our building, you walk in ground level, that level, one flight up, one flight down. In the course of the 52 years that the building is standing, there must have been at least 10 holdups. As a matter of fact, I remember Rebbetzin Lewittis, the guy comes again. She says, "You're the same crook like last time." And then recently there was a holdup, was unbelievable. A family moved into one of the one minus one apartments and they put in cameras. I don't know how they were so smart. And this guy came and he held up Sam Dershowitz. That apartment, the camera caught him. Believe it or not, the police caught him a few days later. A miracle happened. My car, don't ask what we've gone through. Shem Yirachem. But Potter min hasukkah. I in your house too. People can knock on the door. People can jump down into the mirpeset. And he says, "Avol pashut the babayit sagur umsuga yoteshamur misukkah tucha." And he's right. He knows his way around. This is a man who's living in the real world. Yes, there can be holdups, but in your house you feel more secure. The door is locked. The windows are locked. God have mercy what people put on. Bars, cameras. There's no end to what you can do for security. I have two locks on my door. One lock is the Rav Bariach. It's supposed to lock it four different ways. One lock is a safe lock. I don't even use it because my children say, no, that they say they have the key. But then you have the lock that you put what is it called? Where you push it in and you put a thing in that locks it. I don't even know the name of it. What's it called?
A deadbolt?
Bolt. It's like a little bolt. Everyone has it in America. You have it too. A more sophisticated lock that you can't budge. Guts a love pit and what we go through, that's the one I don't use because my children say if God forbid it is an emergency, they have to be able to get into the house with their keys. And we're older, so they've been warned, tell your parents not to use that lock. Okay, not to bolt the door. And he says, yes, but the hold up on the streets is much more frightening and much more prevalent than what goes on in the house, which is much more secure. And then he goes in, I mean, it's unbelievable, the tshuva. Then he goes in, well, wait a minute. Maybe there's a solution. Vic, did you ever spend time in a hotel playing music, making the people happy, your band, you get a free vacation, whatever. Maybe they throw tips at you, I don't know. I don't know what was. But in the Catskills, so wait a minute, the Jews in Borough Park, Zala Zayn Gesund, let him go up to the Catskills and let him go to a hotel. Let him spend a little money and enjoy life and be mekayim the mitzvah. And Rav Menashe Klein says, what, are you out of your mind? And this, I'm quoting him now, he gives the example. Imagine you couldn't get an etrog. And you heard there were etrogim in Boston. Why he picked on Boston, I don't know. Maybe if I want to play a game, I'll say, Ruach HaKodesh, he knew the Rav was in Boston, and where my Rebbe is, there have to be a drogum for Sukkah. So we'll play it that way. You'll see tomorrow, I'm going to play it that way with something else. If I reach it tomorrow, I reach it, you'll see exactly what I'm doing. So you're not obligated, he said. Imagine you're going to spend all that money to go up to Boston. You're not obligated to go to a 4 or 5 star hotel. If you could rent a room a few blocks from your house, one room, if that's possible, fine. So you build the sukkah there. But to go up to the mountains, to leave your family, I'm quoting him, to leave your neighborhood, to leave your shul, to leave your kiddush group, to pull away and go up to the mountains, akidei kach l'kayei mitzvah taseh shalashevet b'sukkah l'shev b'sukkah, you are not obligated. And then he talks about more sakana. And lo aleinu, I remember stories like this. And he says, Again, I'm quoting word by word. When I built the sukkah, when I lived in Williamsburg, and I built the sukkah in Williamsburg, the neighbors and the buildings nearby threw bricks into the sukkah. Well, if you have that sakana, I remember in Staten Island when Frum Jews first came there, Ruby Gross, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was the first Frum Jew who insisted, and he built the sukkah in front of his house. So others built sukkot, and lo and behold, the neighbors were throwing in bricks, rocks. So all the Jews built sukkot in back of their house. They have private homes. So you could build in back of the house. No one could throw in, didn't see. So the story was told, I heard this from ear witnesses. They told the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe asked, or nu vasketon, what's going on in Staten Island? And they said, well, everyone builds a sukkah in back of the house except one family. And the Rebbe said, ich ken de mishpacha, Reuben Gross. The Rebbe said, I know this family. And the Rebbe told them, it's Ruby Gross, and he was absolutely right. So Reb Menashe Klein says, when you have sakana of holdups, and you have sakana of throwing bricks into your sukkah, rocks into your sukkah, absolutely mitztaya pata min hasukkah. And Reb Menashe Klein says, I can tell you today, and remember, it's 1972. He says, I don't know where you can build a sukkah in New York City. Borough Park, where I live, there you can build. They're not throwing rocks into the sukkah. Parts of Williamsburg, he says, are good. Where Satmar was in Williamsburg, and that continues until today. Williamsburg is really an interesting community because you have hippies, chassidim, and impoverished people all living side by side. And he says, maybe Forest Hills in Queens. Follow? Forest Hills was then a very fine upgrade community. Maybe he says, Forest Hills in Queens. It doesn't mention Kew Gardens Hills yet, doesn't mention Kew Gardens, doesn't mention Hillcrest. But Forest Hills already was on the map. And let me just go one step further. The person asking the question, and again, we don't have his question, his kuntris, but Rav Menashe Klein quotes him, and he says, what, are you an idiot? And what he proposed with the young Rabbi Reuben, that before Sukkot, the young men should go out and establish a JDL, a Jewish Defense League. And let the non-Jews know, if you're going to start up with the sukkah, we're going to beat the heck out of you. I wish they would have quoted here a JDL like Rav Meir Kahana, but they don't use Meir's name, but he says, Latzeit v'lulchom imachem b'tkifot. And he says, Ahuve yedide, he says, my friend, in New York, you are proposing something like this? I can't understand you. And here we have the tragedy of Jewish existence. Thank God we have a Jewish state. If you're familiar with the Rav's Kol Dodi Dofek, here you have it staring at you. Pashut shemeolom ein darkenu bezeh v'hakol kol Yaakov. We Jews, we don't get involved with defense. We don't get involved with guns. Kol Yaakov. Yadayim yedei Esav. But not Jews. And wow, this is what he says. Could you imagine in Israel if we would say this, Ein dakenu bezeh v'kol kol Yaakov, just daven, learn Torah, No need for weapons, no need for an army, no need for Tzva, Haganali Yisrael. Baruch Hashem, here we can say with dignity, Dam Yehudi Eino Hefker. And then he says, and unbelievable, he has Nevuah here. He's describing New York under de Blasio in the year 2020 of Rav Hachi. Harecha shodrim mefachadim letzeitu luchom im mitnaplim halolu. Ve'en biyecholtam lasot ma shetzrichim lasot. Kol shekein eze bachurim lomdei Torah. And he says, the police are afraid to go out and fight these gangsters. Certainly, a kal vachomer yeshiva bachurim going out. What are you talking about? And I have to tell you that if the Israeli army would do a survey, and you don't want to do it to cause commotion, I have a feeling that in Israel, you have a higher percentage of soldiers who won the highest award for heroism in the army among yeshiva boys than among the general population. I think if you check it out, you will find that among yeshiva boys, or yeshiva men, hezda boys, we have the highest percentage of soldiers in our various wars, lo aleinu, who received the Ot HaMofet, the highest award possible in the Israeli army. Ashreinu shezachinu lekach. We'll pick up where we left off. There's one more topic I just want to cover that's also very fascinating within this tshuva. Then I want to show you the Aruch HaShulchan and the Halacha L'maisa, tie it up. And then we get involved in a question that Elie Weinstein had the other day. You're traveling to Baltimore on Hanukkah, and you're going to be traveling the time of Hadlakat Neirot. How do you light candles? Do you stop light in the car? What an interesting question. Into when can you light candles? That already is widely discussed. But Halacha Lemaisa, you're flying on Sukkot, on Hanukkah. When do you light candles? I once had that. We were flying out of New York, and that was the old El Al buildings before they rebuilt the terminal. And Chabad was there. It was after Plag, and you lit candles in the departure terminal, El Al, after the Plag, because you couldn't light on the plane, and by the time you arrived in Israel, it would be the next morning when you can't light candles already. Very fascinating. Okay, so to reiterate, a tshuva from life, like a movie, the language which he uses also is troublesome today because of all that's going on. If the Cleveland Indians are dropping the name Indians, we are really in trouble. I agree with President Trump on that level. Why are we so upset about the past? Go back to my talk that went around the world this past summer for Shvat Ami, knocking down statues. Go back and hear that talk. Baruch Hashem. God privileged me to give at least one share on a level. So to reiterate, what have we done today? Let me wet my vocal cords. Yomo, did I answer your question?
No.
What's your question? Baruch atah Adonai Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehyeh B'Dvaro. What's your question? You forgot?
I forgot exactly how to formulate it.
You want to formulate it or leave it for next week? Yomo is not exactly asking me the question. So what did we do today? We took Reb Menashe Klein, and we see why he disagrees and why he felt that man who was frightened to walk on the streets is absolutely putter from sukkah. The question of who is putter, what is mitzvah, not an easy question. The avel vis-a-vis the chatan, think about it. The problems of heat, cold, bees in the sukkah, which at times happens. I know that this past sukkah, at one point there was a bee in my daughter's sukkah. We were sitting there and there was a bee. It was this year or a year ago. Maybe it blends into one in my mind. But that's a real problem. I remember in Maplewood when I built my sukkah on the ground, I had that problem. I don't have it in Yerushalayim where my sukkah is like 10 stories up from the ground. Very fascinating question. What is mitztar? Where do you draw the lines? And how do we differentiate between something you can control, something you can't control? Building a sukkah lachila where you know you'll be mitztar, the obligation to spend money to do a mitzvah taseh, how far does it go? How far does it go with sukkah? Hold-ups, the difference between being on the street, being in your house. There's endless material in this sukkah. The proposal, ADL, before Sukkot, and Rav Menashe Klein is laughing, yeshiva boys are going to go out and suddenly they're going to be Hakol Kol, instead of Hakol Kol Yaakov, Yadayim Yadei Esav, and he says it's beyond the realm of possibility. Okay, I just, one second further. Let me just lift this up. First of all, I was very happy. Shalavim publishes its, a pamphlet, its connection to its students, graduates. And I'm happy to see that two of my talmidim from here wrote articles that appear in Sha'alei Orat, published by Shalavim. And Eli, you're one of them. Kala Kavod, happy to see people following the Rebbe's path on that level as well. Something only in Israel, perhaps. I was shopping in Rami Levi this past Tuesday, and when I'm walking out, there's a gentleman giving out, Rami Levi probably paid for its publication, a beautiful publication on Shabbat. It has halacha, agada, hashkafa, and a lot of psak halacha lemaisa. It's evidently, this volume here is 175 pages. It's a kitsur of what Rav David Shalom Naki Svadi Tahar has published on this topic. It's very well done. And the psakim where Ashkenazim and Svadim differ, he takes it apart and shows you this is the psak of Svadim, this is the psak of Ashkenazim. Asher Weiss, so this week, has dealt with Corona, and here again we Jews, Baruch Hashem, love to argue. Maybe it's from the Gemara, Bayan Rav, it's part of our nature. Das Teira, ushering completely the vaccine, ushering completely. The Pasquales are up all over Yerushalayim. In America, Pasquales went up, Das Teira, Odot, HaVaccine, Neged Corona, and signed off by Rav Malkiel Kutler, by Rav Eliyahu Dov Vachtvogel, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, etc., etc., all totally against the vaccine. Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky issued a personal letter that he absolutely did not sign this. It was done just copying his signature. And he said, go and ask your doctor. So Rav Asher Weiss has an entire contrist, and in America I also got from RCA, OU, absolutely to take the vaccine 100%. So once again, LaYehudim Ha Orava Simcha. My own humble opinion is I was alive and still remember well when the Salk and Sabin vaccines came out. Two Jews who would have been Gedolei Israel had they devoted their life to learning, but they saved the world. I still remember students who limped. I remember FDR, who was in a wheelchair. They only took his picture from his chest up. They never showed you how he can't walk. All victims of polio. And Baruch Hashem, today we have defeated polio, and everyone should be vaccinated as soon as possible. With that, I want to thank everyone sitting in front of me and everyone for honoring me with your presence until we meet again tomorrow. I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shiur for all the vaccines that are being produced around the world today, tens of millions. I hope tomorrow's shiur is better than all of them. That's 9 o'clock tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'danya. Mori, open it up for comment. As we watch,
the recording has stopped.
Shkayach. Okay. Anyone have any question? Yoshua, I want to ask you a question.
Okay, everyone can unmute now. But Rebbe, one of the big differences between this and the smallpox and the polio and everything, which is much safer, there is no Corona-19 inside this vaccine. It's what it does. It makes your immune system produce antibodies to fight it. There's no chance in the world of getting a disease with this virus. With this.
So it's what you're saying is it's even safer. It's even safer. But that's a scientist speaking. So listen carefully.
There will be in a sizable percentage of people some side effects, some reactions in the last day or two, but that's really minimal.
Right, but then any vaccine. I remember a year ago I had a bad vaccine. I had some side effects after the flu vaccine. This year, my wife and I had none whatsoever. And
what you get. It's not against the virus. It's against that your body is being injected with something, and it's different, and it fights against it. But it's not against the disease itself.
Uh-huh.
Right. There are no longitudinal studies yet.
Look, you know how many people are dying? We're dealing here with an unbelievable situation. I go back to my book, the first year I gave after Pesach, when we could start teaching again via Zoom. I go back to that talk. Not one word that I said then would I correct. I stand by every syllable, and time, unfortunately, has proven me correct. The Ribbono Shel Olam is hitting us very hard. If you saw today's post, a full page article, one tremendous New York Times page on why you and the homosexuals dancing on our Torah heads.
Today.
It is today. One full page. I haven't read it yet. I'm sick to my stomach, but I'll read it later. And the world has gone crazy. Everything is permitted. There's no God. There's no Torah. There's no revelation. There are no Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. And it's just beyond comprehension where we're at. And in our own camp, who would ever dream that Orthodox rabbis would say Shechiyanu when the Supreme Court ruled that you can recognize homosexual marriages if the state recognizes it. And a group has now been formed challenging Chovevei Torah on a number of points, and I would sign on with that group 100%. Rabbi Dov Fisher is one of the people, Rabbi Gordiner, if I'm pronouncing it right.
Gordimer.
Very, very good people, etc. So God is telling us he's around, he exists, and I only hope we can end the plague. The Ribbono Shel Olam promised us that there never be a flood again wiping out everyone. But it doesn't mean there'll be a partial wipeout. And that's what we have today. The death toll across the world is over millions already. In America alone is over 300,000. You see what's going on in Europe. Britain has a total close down. And you still have morons who are opposed to the businesses have to survive, let the people die, but the businesses have to survive. And it seems that although the elder people are more susceptible, but you see today how many younger people, right here in Israel, what is it, one of the key politicians, Beitun of Male Adumim, is in critical condition in the hospital. With this disease, and how many Rabbanim have died, how many Machanchim, it's frightening, absolutely frightening. We have to be chozer b'tshuva, but we have to do everything that the doctors tell us. We can't be overly wise here. And these people who signed, you have an element in America among the so-called gedolim that they are, I don't want to use this, I question their intelligence, plain and simple. I would be frightened to think that this is the way they handle a Daf Gemara and handle a difficult Rambam and handle a Shaila and Tshuva like Reb Menashe Klein had. Very, very frightening. It's not just in this Inyan, it's part of the course, as I will allude to tomorrow. Are there any...
Rebbe?
Yeah?
In Israel, Rav Kanievsky and Rav Edelstein have come out, Das Torah, you must take it.
Yeah, right, right. They've been...
People go Das Torah, how can they play games?
Right. Listen, what can I tell you? Halavai. They were quoted in the secular press here, in the general press. It's beyond comprehension to me how you can have Pasquales like that. And people are afraid. Yes, there are limitations. They don't want pregnant women to take it. And anyone who wants to become pregnant within a month or so, they don't want you to take it. So, okay, you have to follow what the guidelines are. But Nikaveletov, we should only be able to go back to a normal lifestyle. It's very difficult. And yesterday, Mincham, at least in the morning, 6:30 Minyan, we had the Sach HaKol, 18 people. If you know how big old Rivka is, each one had that 18 benches to himself, not seats, benches. But I come back from Mincha at 1:30 Minyan, at 1 o'clock Minyan, the early Minyan, old Rivka, they're davening outside. All right, Baruch Hashem, the shul is open, so I could sit inside. And Friday night, my son-in-law's minion, he's still davening outside. Thank God the windows are open, so three old-timers like myself sit inside. But halavai, then walking home, my daughter's walking with me, and my son-in-law's walking with me, and we're walking through street minyanim. It's still going on very, very strong. So, all right, the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have to be proud what we've accomplished. I'm very proud. I haven't, if you kept track, I didn't miss a shiur. Even for the Shurim, I missed after Purim, I made up after Shavuot. But last week, all right, Lav Bidi Dei Toli Milta, Ones Rachmana Patre. But Baruch Hashem, we've managed L'Kavod L'Tiferet, but with YU and the homosexuality, it breaks the heart. And the worst part is that most of these people are not homosexuals, not lesbians. I've taught Torah 62 years. I've experienced it black and white. I know what I'm talking about. It's sociological, it's psychological, it can be many other reasons, but it's not a natural inborn tendency. But once we accept it and it's normative, then of course, instead of being under 2% of the population, it suddenly becomes 10%, 15%, who knows what it'll be in 100 years. Anyone who's has a normal sexual life will be looked upon as being abnormal. God have mercy. It's the end of the world if that's the case. Yoshua, I want to ask you a question. I saw an advertisement that you have a big program this week and there's so many different people speaking and you have one session honoring Rabbi Riskin. But I noticed Rabbi Riskin is not speaking. And my wife and I both asked the same thing. Why isn't he speaking? Well, that's taken for granted. Once they're honoring him, he'll respond. That's what you're saying. He's taking...
During that particular... Yeah.
Okay.
Answer the question, Rebbe.
Okay. Baruch Hashem. But he's well. I mean, that was the implication when you say he's being honored. I want to tell you, when they honor you, it's not good. Because when I turned 80, you have no idea how many people wanted to honor me. And I said, nothing doing. The people I know who were on it, I don't want to go further. And I have a lot more to teach. So the wind up was, we did a family affair, and I announced that the family affair, it's the last time we're doing an honor, 80, 85, 90, etc., etc., etc. Genug, finished. Let the Ribbono Shel Olam be happy with us. But... the other honor, I was very moved. I have to be honest. YU surprised me here. They made a whole... I finished here, they said, come upstairs, we want to drink a l'chaim, and it turned out there was a whole suda, and I felt bad. I would have told them, please make it, invite my students. But it was the staff here, the academic staff and the administrative staff, and they had people from New York. Rabbi, the president of YU spoke, my student, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, Rabbi Heschel Schechter spoke. Others were there. I mean, they really did something beautiful. And I'll tell you, it feels good to be appreciated because, you sit, you teach, you machadesh, you publish. How many people? I'm working on something very important. I consider the most important thing I've ever written. I say to myself, how many people read this? How many people understand what I'm saying? But all right, we have to do, we have to do. I can tell you, Lahavdil, the Rav, people bothered him, Rebbe, why don't you publish? And you know what the Rav said? You won't believe it. The Rav said, how many people are interested? And it's a waste of time. He was very negative. And take a look today, every last manuscript that the Rav left is being published in English, translated into Hebrew. They even published the Rav in Yiddish. My Talmud's father, not Nathaniel Fishman, I think his father's Professor David Fishman, Yiddish at JTS, he published everything the Rav said originally in Yiddish, the famous drashot, with the family's permission, imprint. He published it in Yiddish, Kanayin Hara. All right. So I want to thank you once again for being with me. The cover to the Tiferet. Yeah. Yes?
Just one thing.
Nachum?
You said Ruby Gross.
Right.
He had a sukkah. Wasn't he one of the founders of the JDL?
He was a supporter. I don't think he was a founder. He was a little older than
me. He was a supporter. He was one of the
No, he was a supporter. Yeah. And I can tell you what supporters...
Maybe
1 second. There was a person who davens in the Shtiblach. He's a builder here. He was a builder in America. His father was a musmach of the yeshiva among the first musmachim, maybe in 1928-29, and very fine Jew. And he was a big supporter of Meir Kahane. He came in Aliyah. He came in the 80s. He did army and did everything. And, he thought, fine, good. He's a normal citizen. Would you believe it, when Meir Kahane died, when he was assassinated in New York, remember? Within a week, the Shin Bet was in touch with him here. They interviewed him and wanted to know what he knew. So it shows you how the Shin Bet works. They know everything. It's beyond words. This guy was a total innocent guy, davening 3 times a day, making a little money here, involved in construction. Did on me. What do you want out of him? The Shin Bet called him in. Wow. Okay, I can tell you more stories. My grandson was driving us the other day to a family party, a great-grandson turned 2. So we see this place. I don't want to mention anything now. And I tell my grandson, This is all Shin Bet and Mossad. He says... And then this is a grandson who's a fighter, a lochem, etc. He says, how do you know? I said, look at the building. What do you see on top of it? And then, I saw he could probably say, well, there are other buildings, there are no other buildings in Shittim with all that mechanisms on top. I said, but when I worked on the Baumel case, that's where I would meet at times with the Mossad people, army intelligence. Then he said, you're right. Once I told him that, he said, you're right. But I couldn't get over it. Be quiet. Mark, what did you... Who wanted to say something? I cut them off.
Rabbi, yeah. I said on the first night of Sukkot, I try to be not mocked for Ted Bob, not just to have a shiur pot with kavana, but even to use water challah if I can, and not to be mafsik between the leishet basukah and washing and motzi.
Well, 1 second.
A couple of years ago.
Why water challah?
It looked like it was going to start raining, and there were many guests, so I thought it would take a while for everybody to wash. I made the suggestion to hold the leishet basukah until motzi. The Baal HaBayit didn't go along with it. I washed, but because there were still more people washing, I didn't make the anatilat yadayim yet. Before everybody could finish washing, It started pouring. It didn't stop. All the candles went out, and we had to wait hours.
Wow. What do you mean,
isn't there an Indian of Prusume Nisa for an Asefa?
Well, that's the... But once the person made the bracha, how can you make the bracha again? That's the whole problem.
Well, that might be a riglet.
You're saying if there are people... You're saying if there are people there who didn't light in their home. But you find in Jerusalem, how are you going to find people who didn't light their home? They're at a wedding. Every last person lit...
Well, that's done before. If there's a mitzvah, if there's a chagigah before, they may not have lit yet.
So then how can they make a bracha later?
I'm not sure, but they might not be able to eat if they didn't do it before.
That's a different story, how you're allowed to. You're absolutely right. My grandson made the party for my great-grandson at 2:30, which is very bad for me because I generally wake up at around then. But he made it then, so there'll be no problem with lighting candles. By the time we finished the party, we ran to Daven Mincha, and lo and behold, we lit candles normal time. I have to sign off here, because another class will be in shortly. I want to thank you once again, and until we meet in health.
I'll write the rest in an email.
Yeah, why a water challah? I didn't understand that.
Also, so it should be like Tetzav, Tetzav. It should be Sparadim or Makpid in general on that, not to have egg. But for Tetvav, Tetvav, that it should be like Pesach.
What do you mean eggs? In challah they put eggs? In challah? Sweet challah. That's what say that for the svadim they'd make a mazonah. That's a different problem. On egg matzah, on regular matzah they make a mazonah all year. Halach had come of a kamar.
Right, but I'm saying challah, they usually are makpid not to have egg in it during the year.
I didn't know that. But water challah is tasteless. They make beautiful challah in Yerushalayim. Why not enjoy the chag? Okay, until we meet again.
The person you referred to is Moshe Rosenberg, if it's who I think it is, in Kew Gardens Hills.
And what did I say?
Moshe Rosenberg is married to Atara's daughter.
One second. No. Atara's daughter? One second.
Atara's daughter is married to Jonathan Rosenblatt.
If I said Rosenblatt, it's a ta'ut, it's Rosenberg, Moshe Rosenberg.
Right.
Unless one second, I
know
whenever you want to find a paper, I can find everything, but I want to be sure.
I want to be sure
I'm right. No, Moshe Rosenblatt. So it's someone else then. Okay. Then it's someone else. Rosenberg and Pugat. So then I apologize. Thank you for the correction. He signed it. Yeah, it reads Moshe Rosenblatt. So I was confusing him.
Because it's funny, he worked with Jonathan Rosenblatt when he was in RJC. I thought maybe you were confusing that.
No.
Mars used to live in Sheepshead Bay near us. He would come to my parents' shul whenever he went around and give him machter and try to get into Davin Musaf. So David and Yulana were in Hillcrest, and there was another son, I think Uri, who was in YU, whom I knew well when I was in YU.
It reads Moshe Rosenblatt. Okay,
yeah,
so he's the one, so I'm confusing the two. Okay. Thank you for correcting me. Till we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Thank you so much for honoring me with your presence. And thank you to Ellen for honoring me with your presence, even though everyone says these classes for the Kollel are a luxury. We have to sit and learn Gemara, and we have to sit and learn. Where is Yomo? Yomo, can you, one second. I can't work the mouse.
Anyways, you can ignore that part of the email that I sent.
Okay. Leave me the
bottom.
I got it. Okay.